Welcome to the latest episode of Aerospace Radio Station Extended.
Hello there, I'm Peter Johnson, and welcome to the latest episode of Aerospace Radio Station Extended. It's not been lost on many of you that our desire to continue to focus on bringing more women into the sector, and we've been blessed with some fabulous role models, such as our co-presenter Ellie Carter and the guests we featured on our Women in Aviation series. But there's still so much more that we need to do. And today, we welcome the founder of Elevate Her, Catherine Maloney. Catherine, welcome to Extended.
Hi, thank you so much for having me on. It's so lovely to be here and talk to you.
Well, it's a delight to have you here, and I'm really excited about listening to and hearing about some of the news and the initiatives you're running. But let's start with the powerful message. 4.7% of pilots in the UK are women. What's that say to you?
It says there's a lot of room for improvement. It says that it can't get much worse. There's the only way is up from here. It also says a couple of other things to me, and one of them is we cannot do what we want to do to increase diversity in aviation without the support of the 95%. So, you know, obviously women do not make up the majority of the aviation industry, but we need amazing allies and, you know, great partners and key players within the industry to help push diversity forward as well, and to help include more and more people. But, you know, why does this all matter is something I get asked a lot. You know, why does this matter to have more women in aviation, to have more diversity? And for me, it comes down to innovation. You know, aviation is innovation. It always has been. And aviation is actually very young, really, compared to a lot of other industries. And we cannot have that innovation to drive ourselves forward, to have those, you know, new breakthrough moments to become more sustainable. There's so many other areas of aviation that you need that innovation for, and that can only come from a diverse amount of people, you know, with diversity of backgrounds, of diversities of point of view. And I think that's really why it's important. But you might be interested to know that, you know, another thing I get asked is, what is your overarching goal of Elevate Her? You know, what are you doing this all for?
Yeah.
And for me, actually, is for it to no longer be needed anymore. I would love that to be the overall goal. Maybe I'll just keep it to Elevate.
Okay, so where did this all start then? How did Catherine get into aviation? Where did that bug hit?
Yeah, so my story is probably a bit unusual compared to most stories. You know, you speak to most people and they go, I wanted to be a pilot ever since I was 4 years old. And that's fantastic. And I absolutely love those stories. But that wasn't my story. And, you know, I've been incredibly lucky to be a part of an aviation family. My dad is my biggest inspiration, mentor, general legend. You know, he's a really great guy. But I think because of that, because I was surrounded with it at such a young age, I didn't look at it in close enough detail. I did not appreciate it for how amazing aviation was. And even, you know, how talented my dad is as a pilot, you know, I completely went over my head from quite a young age. So I never considered aviation. And, you know, at school even, we did aptitude testing and it was quite extensive. You get like this 12-page report back. And at the end of mine, it said, oh, you should apply to the RAF as a pilot. And I was like, what are you talking about? That's insane. I actually threw it in the bin. I never looked at it again. I wish I kept it.
Wow.
But, you know, I was like, that's not for me. In my head, I had this maverick figure of you know, RAF pilot that I didn't relate to, and I could not see myself in that role.
What was your father's flying career, if you don't mind me asking?
Absolutely. So my dad, he's been a general aviation pilot for years and years. He flies a helicopter and fixed wing, but he was also a civilian jet display pilot. So he displays the JP in a pairs team, and he also did Strike Master solo display as well.
Okay.
So I spent a lot of time, you know, me and my brother when we were younger, going to air shows. Famously, Shoreham Air Show was where he was based for a long time. But to be honest, me and my brother were much more occupied with the ice creams and bouncy castles than any of the flying, which I'm very sad about now. I wish when I was younger I'd paid much more attention. But you don't know these things when you're younger, and you know.
Yeah.
And I definitely wish I had paid more attention.
Do you feel any pressure on you to coming into the industry because of what your dad has done and flown?
Yeah, no, I don't at all, actually. I really don't. My dad never pushed me into aviation at all. You know, he never did. And he absolutely knows that this is an industry that is more than a job, it's vocational. And unless you have that yeah. in you, that need to fly, that need to be around aviation, then, you know, it's a very hard industry to work in. So he never pushed me towards it at all. And if anything, I think when I started flying, he tried to push me away from it.
Right, okay.
I think more than anything else. But it didn't work. I still had that trial lesson while I was working in the warehouse at Transair, and, you know, rest is history.
Let me pull you back, Catherine. You mentioned something there, working in the warehouse. Mm. That's where you started your aviation journey, wasn't it?
Absolutely.
You didn't just go into having flying lessons and become a pilot straight away. Tell me about those first steps.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, basically I came out of school. I didn't go to university. It wasn't for me. I always wanted to go to work straight away. I think university is great. Just wasn't for me. So I was at a bit of a loose end, and my dad said, "Hey, look, we need someone to temp in the warehouse over Christmas. Would you be interested?" And I was like, "Absolutely, let's do it." So I started working in the warehouse, and actually, I loved it. I absolutely loved working in the warehouse. Some of the, you know, when I look back, I'm like, "Wow, that was such a fun, happy time for me. I really enjoyed it." And then during that time, you know, I came from not knowing anything about aviation, not understanding it, you know, really very limited knowledge. And, you know, I was handling all these products every day, and I was seeing what was going on at Transair. And I was like, wow, actually, this is really interesting. I would love to learn more. And my dad goes, well, that's fine. If you want to learn more, that's up to you. But really, you should start with a trial lesson and just get an idea of what it's all about. And I said, yeah, that's a great idea. So I had a look around the airfield. And I was like, oh, helicopter, that looks really cool. I'd like to have a go at that. I absolutely never had any intention of going any further with it. I was like, I would love to just have an experience, see what it's all about, go back to work, you know.
Yeah.
But that flight absolutely changed my life. You know, from the moment that I had a go at flying myself, I thought, why have I been blind to this for so long?
Yeah.
I saw it with completely new eyes.
And did the work that you did in the Transair warehouse prepare you and help you with any of that? Because it wasn't just a Christmas job, was it? You rose quite gently to quite a senior role, so you would have had a lot of experience in the products, which for those of us who know Transair is all about, you know, the maps and the kit and the radios and the receivers and everything else. Did that give you a bit of a basis to understand, when you sat in that cockpit, some of the things that were around you?
Absolutely. No, it definitely helped. But you know what? I would say more than handling the products, it was the people. So, you know, Transair has always had amazing, amazing young pilots come through it and go on to do commercial careers. And we love that. You know, they come work for a bit and then they go on to do their flying careers. That's fantastic. But being surrounded with so many passionate people all the time, you can't help but get enthused and want to learn more. And, you know, I think that was definitely more of that had more of an impact on me. And, you know, I love Transair. I've always loved working there. And yes, it did end up being longer than a Christmas job. I think it had everyone's shock and awe, like definitely my dad's. But you know, if anyone out there who's listening and does know my dad or knows Transair knows that I was not given any preferential treatment. I think if anything, it was quite the reverse.
You had to work a bit harder.
Why
helicopters? I mean, you couldn't have chosen anything harder in the world, I think.
Do you know what? Actually, I think I did it the easy way around. I think I got off lightly with it because I went in with absolutely no previous conception about flying. No, you know, I had no hours fixed wing. I had nothing. I think it's so much easier to learn to fly a helicopter when you have nothing to base it off. You just learn it completely from scratch. So I think actually I was very lucky to do it that way around, looking back. Although obviously everyone has their challenges during flight training. You know, I had the same ones. It was a fantastic experience. And honestly, it was just one of the most fun times. Learning to fly is always the best bit.
And you're a PPL helicopter license holder. What was the biggest challenge that you faced during that those early days? Was there one incident that sort of broke you or changed you, or were there a number of things that sort of affected that journey to getting that license?
Yeah, I mean, everybody's journey learning to fly is different. Like, everybody experiences different things, they have different challenges. And speaking just from my personal experience about my own journey, my biggest challenge was myself, 100%.
Right.
You know, when I started learning to fly, I was not an overly confident person. I did not have probably enough self-belief. And obviously, it's very hard to do things like flying if you don't have those. Which is why I'm so grateful to aviation, because learning to fly, those little moments, even, well, I say little moments, but soloing, you know, things like that, your cross-country qualifier,
yeah,
it just changes that narrative in your head about what is possible for you and what you can accomplish. And, you know, I'm sure I'm not alone in this. I'm sure everyone on some level has experienced that, where you land after your first solo and you're like, wow, I never thought I could do that. And it's really is an incredible thing, which is why, you know, in part why I'm so passionate about trying to get young people, you know, and young women and young men to give aviation a go, because I think it does so much for you, not even just learning to fly. Okay, learning to fly is great, but it does so much for you as a person.
Yeah.
And, you know, bringing in that self-confidence, that self-belief and that self-reliance, I think can go a long way, even if you don't stay in aviation as an industry.
Yeah. So you then went on to not only get your helicopter license, but your fixed wing as well. Why did you do that as well?
Yeah. Great question. So basically, I'd flown helicopter for 4 years. Absolutely love it. You know, if I had to pick between, I probably would go helicopter. I absolutely love it. But aviation is so broad, it's so vast. There's so many facets. There's so many things to learn and to try. And this happened over 2020, actually. I was sitting down. Obviously, we couldn't do anything. And I think, oh, I was reading some, you know, aerobatic stuff. I was like, oh, I'd really love to give this a go and, you know, experience that completely different side of aviation that I'd not seen before. So when I was able to, I just walked down. I was like, oh, can I have a trial lesson? And I was exceptionally lucky with my instructor. So it just happened that where I learned to fly fixed wing, which was FPT at Shoreham Airport, they just had Toby Keeley come on as an instructor, and he was ex-Red Arrow, ex-Synchro lead, and a really great guy. And I was his first trial lesson.
Oh, okay. Wow.
First trial lesson ever. And I was his first and only PPL student. I don't know what I should think about that. I ruined it for him. but, you know, I had this flight with him and I was like, wow, this is amazing.
Yeah.
Completely different, new challenge. I mean, the circuit, I had no idea what a fixed wing circuit was, you know, landing on the runway, you know, actually committing to landing in one place. you know, there were so many different things. I was way too comfortable flying slowly because I was used to the hopping.
Yeah.
I was way too uncomfortable putting the nose forward because it's not something that you do in a helicopter. It completely changed my view of the industry and of aviating as a whole. And you know, learning to fly fixed wing improved my aviating massively. I'm so, you know, grateful for that experience. It really did. I learned to fly more properly. I think I'm not ashamed to say that, but it really helped me a lot. Seriously, it was a great experience.
I didn't ask you what aircraft types you learn on. What did you learn on the helicopter, and what did you learn on fixed wing?
Yeah, so a helicopter I learned on the trusty R-44. Brilliant helicopter, really loved it. And for fixed wing, I learned on the T-67 Firefly, which again was really very, very fun. Had, again, such fun memories of learning to fly in that.
Wow. Okay. So you got both for your licenses in 2022. You became a Department for Transport Aviation Ambassador. Tell us, what's that? I've got to be honest, I'd never heard of it.
Yeah, absolutely. Neither had I before I applied for it. But essentially, you're a bit of a middleman between Department for Transport and the rest of the industry. So we, you know, the ambassadors, they help at events, they help with outreach, but they also feed back what's going on in their particular sector to the Department of Transport. And you have quarterly meetings and you discuss various issues and you give feedback on new initiatives, things like that. which is an absolutely fantastic opportunity. If anyone out there is listening to it and thinking of applying, please do, because it is really brilliant.
Sorry to interrupt you there, Catherine. Is it limited to women or youngsters or old people?
Anyone in the industry who's got an interest, who wants to, see what's going on behind the scenes, help make a difference, anything, like, you know, you are completely welcome.
Right.
Yeah,
okay.
Absolutely.
Interesting. Yeah. Interesting. And what did that lead to then? Where did you go next? Because this is all a very, very tight timeline here, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I've only been in aviation 7 years, 7 or 8 years now, might be 8 now. But there's been a lot going on in a good way. But yeah, so that Department for Transport role, I thought it was brilliant. So I did that for 2 years, which is the maximum you can do. So you can do 2 years and then you hand it over to someone else. But for me, it was amazing because I learned how you can make change happen, you know, because yes, it's great to campaign for things. It's great to draw attention to all kinds of issues. But unless you're in those rooms with those people who can actually make the decisions and change things in a tangible way, it all kind of comes to nothing. Yeah. So for me, it was absolutely fascinating to get a very small look into how do you change things? How do you actually change things? Well, who are the people you need to speak to? What do they say? You know, it for me, it was a really great experience. And I learned so much from that perspective, because I've always been one of those people that I'm like, okay, how do we actually do this though? You know, how do we actually change things? What can we actually amend here that's going to make a difference to the industry and to the people coming in the future? So that was a brilliant experience for me, and I've made some great contacts going forward for that, which, you know, I'm still in touch with and doing some work with the Department for Transport where I can be an assistant as well. So yeah, it's brilliant. And, you know, the cohort they've got this year are, again, great mix of people from all different backgrounds in the industry, all different ages. And I'm really looking forward to seeing what they achieve.
So tell me about the inaugural Women in Aviation lunch that was held at Brighton City Airport.
Yeah, so that was a bit of a rogue move on my part, I'm not going to lie. I'm not probably the most outgoing person. I say to people that I'm an extrovert, masquerading as an extrovert, basically.
Yeah.
So this was very, very rogue. But, you know, throughout all my flight training, I never come across another woman in aviation, not a student or instructor, examiner. And this is not to detract from the amazing male instructors and mentors that I've had throughout my career, because they have been, you know, incredible.
Yeah, understood.
But I was missing a sense of connection, you know, with people that I could relate to, like myself, and see those female role models. So what I decided to do was to host a lunch at Brighton City Airport. So I spoke to the airport, hired a room, organised a plate of sandwiches, and sent out blanket invitations to anyone I could think of in the industry who was a woman, like friends of friends, people I just heard of, messaged a bunch of people on Instagram, which they were probably very weirded out randomly getting a message from me inviting them to this weird event. But, you know, I reached out as much as I could. And then on, I think it was the 2nd of July, we had just under 40 women attend. And it was just the most electric day.
Wow.
It was fantastic to speak to people. And the real sense of kind of cohesion, everyone coming together and sharing those experiences and just having a laugh, to be honest, and just talking about aviation. It was just a brilliant day, really. And then it was those women that I met that day and spoke to that inspired me to take it forward in a more meaningful way, which is when I came up with Elevate Her.
So tell us about Elevate Her. What is it? What's it about? What's your ambition for it? How does it work?
Big questions. Elevate Her is an online resource platform and community dedicated to increasing the percentage of women in aviation careers globally. You might be able to tell I've said that a few times before.
Yeah.
It is absolutely right. That's exactly what we are. We're a group run by volunteers. There's 15 of us now, volunteers in the team who work every day to make this happen. So we have the online resource platform, which has everything you need to know to get into aviation careers, whether it's engineering, air traffic control, pilot roles. We list opportunities, who to follow on Instagram, how to get into warbird volunteering, everything you could need to know is on there. And then the second part, which probably is even more important, is the community aspect. So we have a big presence on social media. We have a membership, but our membership is completely free for life for everyone. Because we don't believe that you should have to pay to access information or a community. That's how we're set up. And we host events. So we've hosted loads of mini socials so far this year. I believe it's 5. And we've just hosted our first one in Arizona at Scottsdale Airport in Arizona, which is incredibly exciting. In May we hosted our annual Elevate Her networking event, and we had just under 100 women attend that event. Brilliant. So it's been incredible. And, you know, we've just been launched just over a year, and it's been a wild ride, but a brilliant one. And, you know, I'm so proud of the team. They do the hard work, you know, day to day. They do everything, and they're incredible women in aviation in their own rights. And yeah, it's been fantastic. We've had over 6.5 million social media views. We've now got thousands of members over 30 countries worldwide. It's been incredible.
Did you know that during the Falklands War in 1982, there was a plan to put the Black Buck raids on steroids by sending an Avro Vulcan to bomb airfield targets on mainland Argentina, potentially returning to RAF Waddington the long way round via Chile, Easter Island, Tahiti, Hawaii, the USA and Canada? Did you also know that during the Second World War, a proposal was made to build B-29 superfortresses in the UK, powered by Bristol Centaurus engines? If your answers to the above are yes, you're probably a regular reader of The Aviation Historian, the quarterly journal, print and digital, that explores the less well-trodden paths of flying history. If your answers are no, visit theaviationhistorian.com and see what you're missing.
G'day, I'm Steve Vischer.
And I'm Grant McCarran from Plane Crazy Down Under.
And you're listening to Extended.
So let's just come back to some of the issues. I hear what you're talking about with Elevate Her. Everyone knows my passion. I've got a young daughter. However much I want to push her, she's not going to probably go into aviation. But I try every summer, every air show. But seriously, what I want her to do is grow up in a world where it is equitable, where nothing feels like it's different because you're a woman or a man or anything else in how you identify yourself. But let's talk about the industry. Where do you think the industry needs to focus its energy on making careers more equitable?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that, you know, there's a couple of issues here. I think a lot of issues can be solved by a cost of flight training. And that's overarching for diversity from all backgrounds, all areas, and inclusivity of the industry. When it comes to cost of flight training, I think that a lot of changes can be made are small, but would make a huge difference. So I think the industry, although it's great to have these cadet schemes, amazing, gives opportunity to so many people, but it doesn't solve the fundamental issues. And if you look at a lot of these cadet schemes, they're getting like 20,000 applications.
Yeah.
You know, that's incredible. There are so many people with the interest in being in this industry who, you know, don't have the means or to be involved. And so I think that the cost of flight training is a huge thing that needs to be tackled. And yes, I get it's a very big issue with a lot of different parts to it. But I think there are areas that can be tackled, like the cost of taking exams, even the cost of having a class one medical, you know, the student loans that should be made available for pilot training so that pilots can have it like you would go to uni, and they don't have that risk element that, you know, a lot of people are putting up front a lot of money. And some of them have got burnt in recent times that we've seen, and that's completely unfair. Yeah. So there's a lot, I think there's a lot of things around the issue of cost flight training that we can tackle that would make a huge difference. And similarly on the you know, talking specifically about the gender aspect, you know, making sure language is inclusive. I mean, I can't tell you how many books I've read where the pilots only refer to as he. You know, it's very, very small things, making sure that you have the correct equipment, PPE, that will fit women as well. You know, there's lots of areas that can make a difference. Even, you know, some GA airfields I've been to, they don't have female loos. Now, I'm not saying this is every GA airfield, because that's not not correct. But yeah. You know, there's small things that the industry can put in place that I think would make a huge difference to the narrative and that underlying perception about aviation.
Yeah, it's really interesting. I work in an industry in my day job where PPE is a big issue, safety, and it's only in the last few years we've designed and developed, like others, PPE for women. It makes such a massive difference difference to those individuals. So it is sometimes some of those small touches that can help people on their journey. Let's come back to the point you made about tens of thousands of people applying for scholarships and cadetships and things like that. Why are they leaving then the industry? Well, they're not even joining it because they don't get those scholarships. Where are these tens of thousands of people going?
I don't know is the answer. I'd love to know. I think it's something that we should do some research into, Department of Transport. I think we should have a look into it, but definitely. And, you know, retention is a big problem in the industry as well.
Yeah.
Especially when we look at women, and there's been a lot of Elevate Her is actually doing a huge survey at the moment on women in aviation about bringing women into the industry, but also retention. And there's a lot of questions around maternity leave, around, you know, women of a certain age who want to have a family and their ability to actually stay in the industry. So we're actually losing a lot of people as well, really talented, you know, skilled, loads of experience. So we need to look at not only how do we bring more people in, but how do we retain those people?
Yeah.
And, you know, coming back to what you said about the cadet schemes, all those people who applied. Okay, you know, great. Not all of them will go on to have pilot roles, but there are so many amazing roles in the aviation industry that need innovative, smart, talented people to drive the industry forward.
Yeah.
And we really need to look at, okay, you didn't get into this for whatever reason, but here are some other options for you could potentially look at going forward in the future too. And it also feeds into, you know, the whole women in aviation, PPE, everything like that, because aircraft design is a huge one.
Yeah.
You know, aircraft are not designed for women. I've had a lot of encounters with women who are really struggling to fit the criteria to actually be able to fly the aircraft, even though they passed everything else.
Yeah.
So unless we get more women, more diversity into the back end of aircraft design, maintenance, etc., we're not going to have that rolling program going forward of improvement.
Yeah. Do you think there are any real, I don't know what the term is, any real step changes that would, I was going to use the word elevate then, would elevate a group quickly? It's not a golden bullet, but are there some things that could really make a big change really quickly? You know, the price of training's been an issue since I was a boy. Mm. You know, it was an issue then. It was expensive. That just feels like such a hard one. You know, cost of fuel and those sorts of things. Are there any potential step changes that can be made? Should we be positively promoting, shall we say, diverse groups into roles just to start getting the numbers up? How do you feel about that issue?
See, I think this is a very tricky issue here. And personally, these are just my personal views. I do not think that there is an easy way. I do not think that there is a quick way. I think it's great to, like I said, implement things like make sure you've got the right PPE, the right facilities, etc. Obviously, that's going to help. But I think it really does start the younger generation from now, you know, looking at schools, looking at changing the narrative in schools about aviation careers and, you know, bringing it up that way. Because the thing is that the right people for the job should always get the job at the end of the day.
Right, okay.
And we should not sacrifice that. But unless you have more diversity coming in the bottom end, you're not going to have that top end when it comes to hiring. So we really do need to focus our efforts on the grassroots of the industry, especially into, you know, general aviation, into schools, into all these kind of areas like gliding, to enthuse more young people, get them into the industry, make it achievable for them to go through the industry. And then by the time you get to that top end of hiring, you should have a more diverse people. However, there is an argument, I think, for I would like to see, this might be a bit controversial, but I'd like to see this trial that some other industries have actually put this in place already, but it's like blind applications for scholarships. I would love to see that trial. Okay. So like no names on scholarship applications.
Yeah.
I'd be interested to see if it had an effect.
Yeah.
But I think there are some small changes we can make like that we could perhaps trial and see, does that make a difference?
Yeah. How about the military, Catherine? How about how you can integrate with those career paths as well?
Yeah, I must say this is not my area of expertise. I'm definitely a GA girl. I've not had much experience with the military at all.
Yeah.
So probably not my area of expertise there. But, I think the same rules apply though, changing the narrative, at the bottom end. But again, like I said, the right people must always, get the job at the end of the day. But we just need more and more diverse people to bring in the bottom end.
Yeah. Okay. Now you've got some great supporters out there. You've mentioned things like membership being free for life. Nothing's free in the world. Everything costs something somewhere. You've got some great sponsors. What are they bringing to the challenge to support you with the messages we've talked about?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, very, very grateful for the companies out there that are working with us, partnering with us. And, you know, their vote is their vote of what they want to see in the future. That's what they bring. They bring their, you know, they've rocked up and they've put it, they want to make a commitment to what they want to see in the future of the industry. And that is absolutely fundamentally important. You know, we cannot make, shout about this all day, every day from the top of my lungs, but unless people actually get on board with it and actually make a commitment and go, hey, we do need to make a change and we do need to make a change now and we want to help you do this, it's never going to get anywhere. So I'm exceedingly grateful for the support these companies have given Elevator, and I very much look forward to changing our small corner of the world with them in the future.
Now, you've been on the BBC, you've been on Flyer, Global Women magazine, list goes on a bit. So I'm really grateful for you joining us here. You've done an amazing job promoting women in aviation, but you mentioned your 15, 16 supporters as well, volunteers, who are helping you, and some of the ambassadors you've got. Tell us about some of those people and what they bring.
Yeah, absolutely. They bring everything. I mean, they are the beating heart of Elevator. They are what Elevator is for, is what it represents. And, you know, we've got some great people like Lily Ayres. She's a private pilot and an engineer, incredibly accomplished lady. I'm very privileged to work. Well, I'm privileged to work with all of them, to be honest. They enthuse me daily. And we've got Maddie Dooley. She's an incredible blog writer of ours. She's just started commercial flying properly. She's absolutely in there now, which is fantastic. We've got Jess, who's private pilot. She's doing her ATPLs at the moment. Kate, who's just finished her commercial flight training. Eloise, who's just started her commercial flight training. List goes on and on. We've got air traffic controllers, engineers, the whole lot. But, you know, they really are what Elevator is all about.
Yeah.
100%.
And we can follow some of those through your web and social media feeds as well, because I've seen some of the progress. Absolutely. So those names are a bit familiar to me. So we'll come back to how people can do that in a minute. But tell us about where are we now then? You've started the program. It's grown exponentially. You've got great support. What's coming up in the program for Elevator next?
Yeah, so we've got some really exciting launches coming up. I won't say too much about them, but we've been working on a lot of different things that will on the outreach side and on the community side. So, the next thing for us is going global, really. I mean, look, it's great. We've had such an amazing reaction in the UK. We've had amazing mini socials. We absolutely love our base here. All the women are incredible. We've had so much support. But when because again, we're very driven by our community. That's one thing we're really focused on. So we do a lot of surveys and questionnaires on what our people want to see from us. And one of the biggest things that we got back was, we wish you had a meetup in Arizona, in California, in Australia. So that's really what we're going to be working on next is, you know, Elevator is a fantastic umbrella. And we want to give the support and provide the tools for those people in their communities who are real role models and fantastic women in aviation themselves to go and create these socials and create their own communities. That's really what we're going to be focusing on next.
Yeah.
But yeah, absolutely. You know, social media is fantastic. We all love social media. It's a bit of a double-edged sword, but it's a great tool to put your message out there. But it doesn't create connection the same way that in-person meetings does.
Right.
So
okay.
We've always got to keep that in the forefront of,
yep.
Yes, online is good, online is great, but in person is where the magic happens, really, is where you create those friendships and meet those people who are going to support you throughout your whole career.
Yeah.
Because as we know, aviation's a fantastic industry, but it's tough.
Yeah.
It's really hard, you know, whatever aspect you're in, whatever you're doing, it's a hard industry to be in. And you need a group of people around you who are going to empower you, who are going to lift you up when you have a bad day. So that's what we're going to try and create.
Wow. And do you attend air shows or events like, I mean, at time of recording, we've got RIA in a few days' time. Mm-hmm. And next week is Farnborough, where the whole world is looking at the UK. Do you and the team get to those sorts of events?
Yeah, absolutely. So like I said, you know, we've only been going for a year. So I wanted to take this summer a little bit, you know, let's see what happens. Let's
yeah, understand.
Come our way. But next year, we're going to have much more of a firm plan as to what we want to do. Certainly, we've attended events so far. We've attended careers fairs with Royal Aeronautical Society, Blackfish Air Day. A lot of our volunteers are going to REAT as well, who will be around there handing out flyers and wearing their kit and talking to people. So say hello if you're there. But I'm actually going to Oshkosh. I'm going off to Oshkosh. Again, we've already attended Aerofrudix Halfen this year.
Yeah.
So that was back in April. And we're also going to Air Expo Abu Dhabi in November.
Wow.
So we're definitely making moves, going to as many different shows as we can. You know, like I said, it's only year one. So I wanted to get a bit of a feel for what we wanted to do first. But definitely Aerofrudix Halfen was a great show for us. Definitely would like to come back with more of a presence to REAT next year, Farnborough. Very much looking forward to Abu Dhabi.
Wow, yeah.
That'll be a very interesting show to go to.
Okay, let me come back to that one then in a minute. If anyone's at Farnborough, look up Tim Robinson, our colleagues at the Royal Aeronautical Society. Glad to see that you've got some links there. Let me come to Abu Dhabi. Culturally and traditionally, not one where women and diversity has been a strong area of focus for them, shall I say. How tricky is that going to be? Because you've got the culture versus the diversity of male, female as well. That's a real challenge.
Yeah, it could be. But, you know, I've got to say, we've had a brilliant reception from them. They've been incredibly accommodating and really want to have us there. Their theme this year is women in aviation. So
brilliant.
That's fantastic to see. And, you know, the fact that we're even having this conversation about us going there to talk about women in aviation just shows how far it's gone already. So that for me, that's just incredible to see. And, you know, the thing is, you can't make change unless you go to places where the change is needed.
Yeah.
So, yes, it might be hard. I'm not entirely sure what we'll get there. I think I genuinely am really excited. I think it's going to be a great show. But you know, we've got to get stuck into the places where we're needed, and I think that kind of area of the world, you know, I think Elevate Her would be great out there. So we've got to go have those conversations and talk to people.
Oshkosh, got to be for you just from the from the flying and the sector's perspective. What a great event! Have you been there before?
I have. In fact, this is my third time. I've gone 3 years in a row now. And I've got to say, like, every time I go out there, I go, this is aviation.
Yeah.
Like, this is it.
There's something
have you been yourself?
It. No, but I've flown in America. But it was a while ago, but I did part of my training in America and in the USA. And the difference is just so massive between Europe and the USA. I know it's changed in the last sort of 10 or 15 years, but when I did my things like my cross country, it was just so big and just so easy. And just everyone was focused on GA being normal, whereas I came back to the UK and it was very restricted. The air was very controlled, and it just was a real cultural shock to have come from something where, you know, my instructor would just say to me, well, I'll tell you what, why don't you just fly 20, 30 miles north, fly around for a while and, you know, do a bit of sightseeing or whatever. And I had to, what, just fly, you know, and it was, yeah, just go. And so it was just culturally so different. So they're a very different, they take a different approach. I know it's changing, but.
I mean, I couldn't agree more, to be honest. I think that we could learn a lot from how the US, you know, does GA and the aviation in general, but how it mixes general aviation and commercial aviation, how it recognises general aviation for what it is, which is part of the transport infrastructure of the country.
Yeah.
You know, I think we could learn a lot. I mean, I know one of my big things is the PPL exams in the UK. Why are there nine? I mean, nowhere else has that. And I'm not talking here about making them easy. I'm talking about making them relevant for what we do. And I think that in itself is a huge barrier for people getting into the industry. But I know I went to a meeting once and I, you know, worked Trans Air. I got all my books up on one side and I had 18 of them because I had nine theory books and then nine question books. And I brought in the FAA manual and I said, guys, come on now. Like even buying these books is a cost factor. And I work at Trans Air. You know what I mean? Like I would happily sell less of these books if it meant more people to buy.
Yeah.
Like, you know, so yeah, we could learn an awful lot from the US, and going out to Oshkosh, I think, is a great show to go to. And also reminds you how big aviation is, how varied it is, how exciting it is. And yeah, I'm so excited to go back there this year.
Wow. Exciting times. So where can we find and follow Elevate Her and Catherine online?
Yeah, absolutely. So Elevate Her is very easy. It's just elevateheraviation.co.uk. And follow us on Instagram at Elevate Her Aviation. You can follow me as well if you like. It's Maloney Catherine, so it's just my name back to front. But yeah, that's where you can find us.
Wow. Okay. Catherine, you are extremely eloquent. You're really inspiring. And it's a fabulous job that you and the folks are doing. So I wish you all the very, very biggest success in making the change we need to see in the world.
Oh, well, thank you so much for having me on. And it really has been so much fun talking with you. Thank you so much.
So that's it. We'd like to thank White Hearts and Mick Oakey, the aviation historian. You can find me at Nascot Hornet on Twitter. And you can find Ellie, Tim and Gareth on the extended Twitter, Facebook, Threads and Instagram feeds. That's it. With the arrival of the music, it's goodbye from Catherine.
Goodbye.
And it's goodbye from me, Peter Johnson. Remember, stay tuned to this frequency. That is, of course, Aerospace Radio Station Extended. Legal policy and use of our material can be found on our website. Please do ask before using anything you hear. The programme's produced with a Creative Commons license.
Please leave us a review wherever you play your podcast. It genuinely helps grow our programme and broaden its reach. You can also review the programme and leave us feedback on our Facebook page. We'd love to hear from you. If you want to email us, our email address is getinvolved@aviationextended.co.uk. And remember, there's no E at the beginning of Extended.
Extended.
This is XTP Media.